Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. South Sudan's Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry says any attempts to resume the construction of Jonglei Canal is a red line.
Up to now, the Jonglei Canal is one of the most difficult issues, and it kind of like creates anxiety to the people of the country.
And gunmen attack a UN convoy in Jonglei State.
Continuing attack on humanitarians and the attempted looting of vital relief which millions of vulnerable people depend on to survive are a flagrant violation of international humanitarian law.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An environmental expert in South Sudan says draining water from the Saad area will not address the problems caused by floods in Jonglei State. The Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry, Africano Batel, says recent statement by South Sudan's Vice President Taban Dengai about the resumption of the construction of Jonglei Canal came as a surprise to some environmental experts in the country. Batel says any attempts to resume the construction of Jonglei Canal will destroy the ecosystem at the Saad wetlands.
We in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry have no plans, or there are no national plans of government regarding the resumption of the Jonglei Canal. We know very well that the Saad wetlands, the largest wetlands in Africa, is currently a Ramsar site, which is a site of international importance, and it's also now in the process of being designated a UNESCO heritage site.
If I can remember history very well, in the 1980s, there was a huge demonstration in South Sudan, or in what was Southern Sudan, against the Jonglei Canal project. What is the issue with this project? Why is it controversial?
The issue with the project, it was not a project that was for the benefit of South Sudan. It was a project that Egypt were eyeing to increase the volume of the water, of the Nile water. So since then, without environmental impact assessment that was supposed to be conducted, the canal was commissioned to be dug. And I'm pretty sure I was a young boy by then. South Sudanese went to the streets and there was one of our students was killed and several were wounded and arrested. And that was during the time of the High Executive Council when Abel Aliar was the president of the High Executive Council. And up to now, the Jonglei Canal is one of the most difficult issues, and it kind of like creates anxiety to the people of the country, simply because it's not a canal that we think has any importance to us other than draining the water that we have.
You are part of the senior management in South Sudan. An undersecretary is a senior management. This call is coming from the top leadership of the country. Was the ministry consulted before Taban Dengai made the statement?
I would have not talked to you if we had that plan as a ministry. I'm currently in Nairobi attending the UNEA, United Nations Environment Assembly. I'm here with the minister, and this is news to us because we as government or the Ministry of Environment have no clue about this project. As I said, in our national plans, mitigation of climate change, our national determined contribution, our adaptation plans as a country, we don't have anything to do with the destruction of the wetlands, because for us, we cherish the Saad wetlands, which is the largest wetlands in Africa, and the ecosystem services of these wetlands is enormous. For example, the rains that we have from the wetlands, it has a big carbon sequestration capacity for fighting climate change.
Carbon sequestration, I mean, for a common man or common layman and woman on the road, they will not understand what that is. Could you expand on that a little?
it's simply just like a carbon sink. You know, when we emit carbon dioxide, it causes global warming. But the Sud has the capacity of taking that carbon from the atmosphere and storing it, thus fighting climate change. So that's what I mean with that. And also the Sud is a biodiversity hotspot. Now we have the largest migration of white-eared corps, zebras, giraffes from Burma to the Sud. Over millions of animals use the Sud as their pastures and a watering place during the dry season. And out of that, if we kind of like drain it, that simply means that wealth, that biodiversity wealth, will be lost. And it has a capacity of giving us over $1 billion a year from tourism.
Insecurity in South Sudan, is there tourism going on in the wetlands?
At the moment, the government is working hard to restore security in the country. And in the next 2 to 3 years, hopefully, we'll be able to attract investors and tourists to our country.
I saw a report out there about assessment of the Sud area. Talk to us about what you have found out. What are the potentials and the capacity of the Sud area?
At the moment, the ministry is having a rapid assessment of the state of the Sud. That report has not been finalized yet, but the preliminary finding is actually what I have just narrated above just a few minutes ago. It's a very important ecosystem. And one thing that people don't know, the Congo forest is there because of the Sud. So now you can see how important that thing is. And one thing that our people have to know, when we drain that Sud and the encroachment of the desert from the north to the south, that simply means the whole of South Sudan will be desert. This is not an alarm, but this is a reality that will happen. So the Sud has to be left alone.
Yeah, let us talk about the geopolitics of the Sud area and the proposed jungle canal. Egypt, down the stream on the River Nile, has appetite for having, continuous flow of water. Your statement could anger people in North Africa, especially the Egyptians. They will think you are fighting their lifeline.
The Sud has been there ever since. So whatever happens, the most important thing is our survival as a country. For them, they want the water. But if we destroy this Sud, where will the rains come in order to replenish the river? Okay, one thing for us as a country now to go and control the floods, we have other options.
What are the options? I have only seen young men constructing dikes to prevent the water from the Nile flooding into their areas. And to the best of my knowledge, I've not seen a government intervention. What are these options?
The options are there. When we have spoken with people in Jongole, because people decided to move and build in the torch, which is a sod or a swamp. Okay, it's because of insecurity. But the thing is, non-structural, something that doesn't need a lot of money, is for people to move to the upper grounds. That is one solution that we can have. And again, not all of our country has water. We have the eastern part of our country. It's just like Egypt. It needs water. Places like Kapweta, Boma, Lafon, we have dry deserts there, and they're also arable land. So there will be a possibility for us to make use of the water in order to be able to supply those areas with water. So this water that is causing floods can be diverted to the east, where we'll be able to make livelihoods for our people using that water. Second, irrigation. Because of climate change, rains are not regular anymore. So for us to be able to maintain or have food security, South Sudan has to start using water for irrigation. So that same water that we use for irrigation will also address the issue of floods than simply saying, okay, let's just drain it out. And because water is going to be a scarce commodity in the next 10 years. So whatever you have to use it, utilize it, than simply say, okay, you just let it go. No. Okay, we can have a reservoir because what the vice president said was Uganda is opening a dam, Sudan is closing Jebel Awliya, so everything is coming. But we can also have our own dam in order to regulate that water. So the solutions are there. Than simply saying, okay, let's just dig this, that's just a knee-jerk reaction. We want to get things by not trying to really think that there are other options that we can do.
That's Africano Battelle, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, on Tuesday. Still on environmental issues, the United Nations International Organization for Migration, IOM, is expressing concern about the impact of conflict and climate change on human mobility in South Sudan. IOM's Deputy Director General calls the impact of climate change in South Sudan catastrophic. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
The UN International Organization for Migration Deputy Director General, Ami Pope, spoke last Friday at the end of a week-long visit to South Sudan to see the impact of climate change on people affected by last year's floods across the country. After visiting Unity State, Pope says the IDP camp in Bentiu is surrounded by water and thousands of people are struggling to survive. Pope says there are more than 110,000 people displaced by conflict and another 20,000 displaced by last year's floods in the country.
Here in South Sudan is where we're seeing the impact of climate change on human mobility. And when you couple that with a country that's gone through violence, that's still seeing violence, where people are in very precarious situations, the results can really be catastrophic.
Pope says internally displaced people or IDPs in Bentiu are struggling to survive after losing their property and livelihoods.
They've lost livestock, they've lost their livelihood, they're at the risk of disease, for example, malaria. So it's an incredibly acute situation.
28-year-old Angela Chagor, a mother of four, who was displaced by floods last year and now lives at an IDP camp in Bentiu town, says she and her children fled their home during flooding, leaving behind everything they owned.
I left all my properties behind, all of them nothing at all, including sleep items, the blanket, torch and sleeping mat, and everything because I am carrying children without a father. All the properties remained at home.
Lieutenant Musa Lasso, Director General for Climate Change and Meteorology at South Sudan's Environment and Forestry Ministry, says the government is unable to help the displaced but is working on a plan.
We don't have any immediate response to flooding, but of course the ministry actually prepared a sort of what is called the NAPA, National Adaptation Program for Action. This one actually deals with the issues on agriculture, smart agriculture, afforestation, early warning systems, and policies actually for climate change.
Lasso says the ministry is also working on ways to mitigate the devastating impacts of climate change, such as planting trees.
We are working hard actually on mitigation. For example, we have the 100 million tree planting project that we are working on. And of course, we want to roll this project all over the country in the 10 states and the three administrative areas.
Lasso says planting trees will help reduce the impact on global warming. In the latest report by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs on South Sudan's humanitarian needs, about 835,000 people were affected by severe flooding between May and December 2021. UN OCHA says above normal rainfall for the third consecutive year in 2021 led to prolonged flooding, which impacted areas that had not flooded in previous years. It says 80% of those affected were from Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile states. On Monday, a major scientific report released by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a body convened by the United Nations, warned drought, heat, hunger and disaster will force millions of people from their homes, including those in sub-Saharan Africa, unless the world moves quickly to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A lawmaker in the East African Parliament says South Sudan's Minister for East African Cooperation has been absent at the regional bloc's meetings. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue?
First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give out what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue, and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue, and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The United Nations Mission in South Sudan and the World Food Programme are condemning an attack on a UN convoy in Jonglei State. The acting UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan says trucks carrying food and nutrition assistance came under attack from gunmen about 160 kilometers from the Jonglei State capital, Bor. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
In a statement issued yesterday, the United Nations Mission in South Sudan and the World Food Programme say unknown gunmen attacked a convoy of 59 trucks carrying WFP food and nutrition assistance 30 kilometers from Gadiang on Monday. The acting humanitarian coordinator at interim for South Sudan, Mishek Malo, says the convoy was under the protection of UN peacekeepers and moving to various parts of Jonglei State to pre-position much-needed assistance for some 95,000 people ahead of the rainy season when access becomes heavily restricted. Malo says one peacekeeper suffered a gunshot wound during the attack.
Continuing attack on humanitarians and the attempted looting of vital relief which millions of vulnerable people depend on to survive are a flagrant violation of international humanitarian law.
Malo says the recent attacks on UN convoys could derail humanitarians' ability to deliver life-saving assistance to people in need during this limited window of opportunity that is available to reach them.
At a time of major funding constraint, the loss of aid due to theft, looting or destructions means that every bag of food, nutrition, or other humanitarian supply looted is stolen directly from the South Sudanese families most in need.
Marwa Howard, the World Food Programme, a spokesperson in South Sudan, called on the government to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators to justice.
This was the latest in a series of attacks against humanitarians, in our case specifically a convoy carrying food items from the World Food Programme, as well as non-food items from the logistics cluster, which supports humanitarian groups and organizations working here. And we also had nutritional supplies, other essential shelter supplies that are needed by the people of South Sudan and in some of the most vulnerable areas and hard-to-reach areas across the country. So any attempt to hinder this humanitarian operation is criminal.
UNMISS and WFP are urging members of local communities to respect humanitarian operations and UN peacekeepers who are working to promote peace and stability in South Sudan. Tuong Majuk is Jonglei State's acting governor.
We are appealing to UNMISS and the partners that not to panic. The government will try means and way to calm down the situation on that highway.
The number of attacks against humanitarian convoys and assets has been on the rise across South Sudan, reaching 591 in 2021, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. Active hostilities, subnational violence, and violence against humanitarian operations have led humanitarian organizations to seek protection from UNMISS during the delivery of humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
South Sudan's Minister for East African Affairs has come under criticism for not attending sessions at the East African Legislative Assembly. Lawmakers in the assembly say they plan to discuss integration of South Sudan into the East African community, but could not do so because South Sudan's Minister Deng Alor Kwal, a member of the Council of Ministers of the regional body, has been absent. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Lawmakers at the ordinary session of the East African Legislative Assembly did not know whether to adjourn yesterday's session or continue after Council Member Deng Alor Kwal from South Sudan failed to attend the meeting. Martin Ngonga, Speaker of the 4th East African Legislative Assembly, said in a video circulating on social media that members had planned to listen to a report regarding the integration of South Sudan, the newest member of the assembly, but Kwal was absent.
Should we start with the process of integrating the minister before we integrate the Republic of South Sudan? So, it is a very unfortunate situation. If it was a one-off incident, it wouldn't be an issue. But this is someone we have never seen here. So it causes us, honestly, to question whether the motive or the commitment, I don't know how we can put it.
South Sudan's Ministry of East African Affairs says it is aware of the concern raised by the East African Legislative Assembly regarding Minister Deng Alor Kwal's failure to attend meetings. Andrea Aguirre-Arik, Undersecretary of the Ministry of East African Affairs, says Alor could not attend the sessions because of other commitments assigned to him by President Salva Kiir.
He was tasked by the President on the committee that was formed to look into the issue between Ngok Dinka and Twitch community of Waraf State. And it's a high-level delegation because the issue was involving death cases and a community conflict. That engaged him, and I think also he was not aware of the time the sitting was on.
South Sudan became a member of the East African community in 2016 after breaking away from Sudan, a move that allowed the country to participate in the East African Legislative Assembly. South Sudan has 9 members in the East African Legislative Assembly. Minister of East African Affairs Deng Alor Kwal is a member in the Council of Ministers in the East African Regional Bloc. Aguirre disputes the claim that Alor has not been attending the meetings.
He has been attending those meetings of the Council, either physically or virtually. So he has never missed those meetings. The issues are in the Yala. It's still okay. The minister will attend today.
After some connection issues with the Zoomed link, Kwal attended today's Yala meeting virtually from Juba. Aguirre says the assembly would like Kwal to update the regional legislative body on some issues.
The East Africa Legislative Assembly wanted to know how far South Sudan implemented the custom union protocol and what are the difficulties, which is okay. That is normal duty of the assembly to do the oversight work. And it is also our duty as a ministry to give them the information they want.
In 2020, the Assembly threatened to suspend South Sudanese lawmakers from the East African Legislative Assembly after the South Sudanese government failed to pay its annual membership fees. Juba has since paid some of its arrears to the regional bloc. Each member of the regional bloc, which includes Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Uganda, Burundi and South Sudan, must pay an annual fee of $8 million to retain its membership in the regional bloc. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken warns that rules of the international order that help protect peace and security will be weakened if Russian President Vladimir Putin is allowed to get away with his invasion of Ukraine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In a video address to the UN Human Rights Council, Blinken warned the human rights and humanitarian crises affecting Ukraine will get worse if Putin succeeds in toppling the country's democratically elected government.
Look at Crimea. where Russia's occupation has come with extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, torture, arbitrary detention, the persecution of ethnic and religious minorities, the brutal repression of dissent. Reports of Russia's human rights abuses and violations of international humanitarian law are mounting by the hour.
Since Russia invaded Ukraine 6 days ago, Blinken notes Russian strikes against civilians and civilian infrastructures have escalated. He says schools, hospitals, and residential buildings have been targeted. He says critical infrastructure providing millions of people with drinking water, with gas to prevent them from freezing, with electricity to keep the lights on, has been destroyed.
The High Commissioner said yesterday that Russia's attacks had killed at least 100 civilians, including children, and wounded hundreds more, and said she expects the real figures are much higher. Russia's violence has driven over 500,000 Ukrainians from the country in just a few days. Children, the elderly, people with disabilities, who are making harrowing journeys through conflict zones.
The Kremlin insisted Tuesday that Russian troops don't conduct any strikes against civilian infrastructure and residential areas. The UN Refugee Agency is preparing for up to 4 million Ukrainians to flee for safety to neighboring countries. UNHCR officials say the situation looks set to become Europe's largest refugee crisis this century. Blinken says Russia's repression does not stop at Ukraine's borders. He says the Kremlin also is ramping up its repression within Russia. He says human rights defenders, journalists, Putin's political opponents have long been subjected to harassment, intimidation, poisoning, and imprisonment. He says this treatment now is being meted out to Russians peacefully protesting the invasion of Ukraine. He says thousands have been detained and anyone found to be assisting a foreign country or organization could be imprisoned for up to 20 years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now end this show with the song Loso. We've been listening to the song entitled Loso. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Body and Ricky, you can't let it. Body and Ricky, you can't let it. 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 You can